Blog Talk Radio.
Quizzical look, right? That what's going on over there? There's some. It got really quiet. Hey, this is Steve Bose. This is the HR Happy Hour coming to you on a special day and time. This is episode 101. We're on to our second sort of century of episodes.
I have no Dalmatians with us.
Are you kidding me? I know. We had a huge episode last week. Just a couple days ago, really. Seems like only yesterday the show turned 100.
Happy birthday.
Just yesterday.
And now we're at 101. So this is Steve Bose. We are live from Fort Worth, Texas at the Acquire User Conference, Structure 2011. It's been fantastic events so far. Today was day one. Wrapped up just a really interesting day one. And that a day, quite frankly, that rose above some shaky presenting by myself and rallied and finished strongly at the end. So welcome, everyone. We're really happy to be here. Our call-in number for anybody who might be catching the show, I know we're at our unusual time, right? One thing I learned early on is to keep the show at its normal time. That's what you do. So but if you're out there and you want to come in, call in and say hi to us at Acquire, that'd be great. Our number is 646-378-1086. Our Twitter hashtag, let's go with the show hashtag right now, HR Happy Hour. The Acquire User Conference has a hashtag as well, Structure 2011, and you can keep an eye on that. Although right now the Structure 2011 hashtag, there's a lot of Lois and I fighting it out on the Twitter stream. So we're going to get a few of the other folks on board. So who's with me right now? First of all, I want to welcome our host for today, tomorrow, for the whole event, friend of the show, long-time supporter of the show, the great, and I say it, China Gorman, I'm apologizing, Lois Melbourne, CEO of Acquire. Welcome, Lois. Thank you for having us. Tell us about Structure 2011.
Well, Structure 2011 allows Acquire employees and customers to get together and talk and learn and dive in deeper to what is going to make both companies better. So we have a wide combination of customers from around the country here, and we didn't get any global customers this year. The economy is obviously sucker-punching the global travel, but because usually we have a fair number of international travelers. But we've got great customer base, and they're here to tell us what they love about Acquire products.
You know, speaking of international travel, I learned today from Ross Melbourne, CTO of Acquire.
Yes.
Right? And some would say, what is, you know, that better half line? I don't want to say that. What's the word? What's the word when the reverse better half?
He is my better half. No, I'm married up.
That.
I really married up well.
So Ross Melbourne did a presentation today where I learned, among other things, I learned a lot. I learned that Texas is actually its own country.
Yes.
So in some ways, this is sort of an international event. Because Ross talked about he moved to a new country. He moved to
Texas.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, everything's big in Texas.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. And then someone else today, I'm not sure whose presentation it was, talked about, I don't know if it was you, I don't think it was you, Beth, maybe it was, the United States, to really understand the United States, you need to understand three things, the East Coast, the West Coast, and Texas.
We're a little egocentric
it's
around
crazy,
here.
Right?
Yeah.
So, well, Lois, it's been a great event so far. I mean, it's fantastic, you know, despite the, you know, torrential downpour that rolled through here at about 11 o'clock this morning, and that's been great. So what are some of the things that you looked for as a CEO, as a leader of an organization, or any little vendor looks for when you put on these kind of customer-centric kind of events? What are you hoping to get out of it?
Communication. And it's two-way. So tomorrow morning we will have our focus groups, which allow people to give us feedback. We show them ideas. We get their ideas. And I picked up several feature requests already today, just talking with customers. And it allows people to put the face to a name as well, because so many of our customers, you know, the first thing that they'll say about Acquire is that my employees are great. And so this way, they know my employees are great, and now they get to meet face-to-face.
Is that the first thing? Because I would think sometimes the first thing is, well, who's that funny British guy she's got working for him?
Well, I wasn't going to bring that up.
All right.
So the first legitimate thing we needed to hit was
important.
That they like my employees.
Yeah, I've heard that today as well. I heard some of that. Boy, you know, I've dealt with so-and-so for a while, and it was so great to see them. And some instances, I heard someone say, well, you know, I really don't need to follow up in person with, you know, Bob or something, because, you know, I've got a great relationship with Bob all year long. You know, I've heard that too.
Ready to meet somebody else.
Yeah.
So now here I know that Zappos is a drinking game.
Oh.
So
cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to Zappos.
Cheers. Reference that fine verb term that starts with a Z, and one of our customers came up to me after your presentation and said, you know what, I don't need to know about Zappos, there's not a drink, customer service, because I think Acquire's customer service even beats theirs.
Wow.
And that is cool.
That is very cool, and I was almost ashamed that I said Zappos. At least, hopefully, I only said it once in the presentation. But it's been great to be here, Lois. Hang out with us for a few minutes. I want to introduce a couple more folks who are sitting around the table. But I want to go to. We talked to her last week on the radio show briefly, right? As sort of legendary in HR Happy Hour lore. Now we see her in person, all the way from the great state of Hawaii. Beth Carvin is with us on the HR Happy Hour. Hello, Beth.
Hello, Steve. Hello, everybody.
How are you?
I am fantastic. This conference is amazing.
So I haven't seen you in almost 2 years, probably, right? Since that quite frankly, legendary HR Happy Hour show.
Yes.
At HR Tech in the Jason Seiden conference
in
room.
In the room.
Great show. That show's turning into one of those kind of moments where lots of people claim to have been there. We know.
We have pictures.
We know who were there and was really there. So, Beth, you came a long way for the event. So what sort of brought you here to Fort Worth today?
What brought me here was actually Thursday night, I think. I left Hawaii and got in Friday morning. So I'm a little time zone messed up right now. But Lois and her team called me up and they said they couldn't find any great stars for their keynote speaker.
The lower 48 states have been pretty much exhausted.
They were trying to get Lil Jon and Meatloaf.
And
maybe Meatloaf.
Fired.
Yeah. And so they asked me, and I was really pleased to join them on this. Lois's favorite topic is always mentoring, because she's the greatest mentor in the world. And so I came up to be the speaker here. And I just wanted to say that I've learned so much just this one day about Acquire. Not only are the staff fantastic and the conference is great, but I had not seen their products before. Steve, had you?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
certainly not all of them, and certainly not the new things we saw.
Yeah. Today. Well, just the whole org publisher and all of that, and my background is human resources, and I don't know why I had not seen it before, and I am so excited now about org publisher and what it can do, and I'm just, you know, thinking about all the ways a company could use it. I'm excited.
Well, Beth, you talked to this morning, and as you opened the show, about your one of your favorite subjects. I don't know if it's your favorite. Mentoring your favorite subject?
Mentoring my favorite subject? Well, not really. It's up there.
Right, right. So you talked about mentoring, and I even mentioned it in my presentation. Not really. Not planning to, even though you were standing right in front of me, but you talked a little bit about the importance of mentoring and mentoring programs in sort of the talent acquisition process. I'd love for you to share that story that you told this morning for the show and for the listeners now.
That's a great idea. This was some new research that I came upon just a couple of weeks ago. One of my researcher friends sent to me, and it was a couple of researchers from the University of South Florida, and they were looking at mentoring as a talent acquisition initiative, and that's the first time I had heard that. And they actually did a study where they studied, I think it was about 190 job seekers, and they took that group and they split them up into two, and they made these recruiting brochures. And one of the brochures was a basic recruiting brochure. The other was the same brochure, but it also had a little blurb about the company having a mentoring program and being focused on developing their talent. And then they studied to see if people would be more attracted to the company that had talked about the mentoring program.
Right.
And sure enough, statistically significant, the people who had seen the brochure that had the mentoring were more attracted to the company. And it also, they looked at the type of person that was attracted to the company with mentoring, and it was the better quality people, the people really wanted to develop themselves and be a real part of the company.
Right, so we got more people, we get more of the right people, and we're really connecting with what at least that cohort felt, one of the things they felt like was important, right?
Was important, and so, there's so many companies that do mentoring, but I don't think that they put that in their recruiting materials. So if you have any online website pages about your recruiting, about your company, and you have a mentoring program, put it on there.
Yeah, I mean, super important. Why not? Why not emphasize those things that sort of make you different, make you great, and will be attractive to the folks you're trying to connect with? It makes perfect sense, but it is like many things that make sense, right?
Yeah.
We wonder why we don't do enough of it or see more of it, right? Okay, let me do a quick reset. We're at the HR Happy Hour, live from Structure 2011. That's a strategic move to go to the 20 versus the 11. We can think about that a little bit. We're at Structure 2011 in Fort Worth, Texas. You know, it's funny, I've only been to Fort Worth twice in my life. Last time was HR Southwest conference last summer, which was fun. And I was looking out my window in the hotel this morning, and I said, well, that's the hotel I stayed in the last time I was here. I can literally see it from the window. It's fantastic. I got to come back more often.
Great city. There's great barbecue here.
I tell you, that's what I hear.
Barbecue.
I'm hoping to get some right after the show. So we're at the HR Happy Hour live from Structure 2011. Lois Melbourne is here. Beth Carvin is here. Lauren is here. Lori Stanford is here. Stelzner, Lori was your voiceover replacement today, by the way. She's gonna be back at the end of the show as well.
Stealing your job.
Kidding me, right? So the call-in number is 646-378-1086. Please do if you want to get on board tonight. So what else? Let's talk to Ryan. We have Ryan here. Welcome, Ryan. Ryan is a partner, participates in projects in and around organizational sort of analysis, analytics, starting to get a lot of experience in that area. And you and I were talking briefly about sort of some of the projects you're working on. I thought maybe, Ryan, you could share some of the things you've learned as sort of a practitioner implementer and what you're seeing out there, and particularly what some large organizations are really struggling with.
Sure. And thank you for having me. One of the things that we see is, particularly in the federal space, is that some of the clients that we have in larger organizations in the federal space have much older HR systems, much older legacy mainframe systems, and don't really have a good handle on the data. Not only don't they have a good idea of what's in their old data sets, but they don't really have the budget to upgrade them. They have plans to replace them in the future, and I think some of the things that, for instance, your publisher tools can do is give our clients a visual insight into what their data looks like, and particularly identifying where the gaps are and where the problems are, so they can go back and do some corrective analysis on them. And I think that when you actually get to see some of your data versus looking around in lots of different Excel spreadsheets and downloading it, you can really make a large difference in the problems that you have in your underlying system when you can actually see a visualization of the information.
Oh, I agree with you, Charlie. I mean, it's hard to get inspired by row figures in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Right? Even if they're, you know, even if you, you know, you highlight them in red or something, right, it's hard to, but when you can see it graphically, right, and you can see whether it's trend lines,
sure,
or gaps in your hierarchy, right, those are the things that make, that sort of catch people's attention.
Yeah, absolutely,
right?
And I think when we saw this this conference come on the radar, we were excited because, you know, the Acquire team is much more of a family and than just a software company. I think that's what we, you know, kind of saw an org charting software company when we first started working together. And with Mark Ramos coming in and a couple of times and really being a part of our team and helping us in our implementation, coming out here and seeing the rest of the group was something that was important to us because, and we felt like a family since we've gotten here. You know, Dallas is, or, you know, Fort Worth and Texas all together is more kind of a family environment.
Now, Ryan, do you get the sense that the sort of the leaders, the HR leaders, the organizational leaders you're working with, that they sort of get the importance and they want to be where they need to be, and it's just other barriers that have sort of kept them from getting there?
I think so.
Is the desire there?
I think so, but when you're working in the federal space, sometimes you are working with some of the leaders who kind of just want to check the box, to be honest. And in some instances, it's hard to narrow down exactly what the problems are and stress the importance of doing things the right way versus doing things the way to get it done. And I think that we can use a number of the tools that we've learned about, you know, here at the conference to get to do things the right way versus the easy way.
Ryan, thanks for that. Hang out with us for a few minutes if you don't mind. Ryan, I think you're in good shape. We are at a happy hour, and I see you need a drink. I see a flashing beverage with a. We have HR Happy Hour and HR Evolution fans will know the light up ice cube gambit. We just had those at the HR Evolution in Atlanta, right?
I have to admit, that's where I got the idea.
I
stole the idea.
Monster.com.
Monster, yes. So, Eric, it's to your credit, but while we were at the happy hour at HR Evolution, I actually sent an email to Mark that said, I want flashy nice kids at my party.
I think it was a text at 2 a.m.
It wasn't 2 a.m., but, yeah, I think it was a text. Give me ice cube.
The HR, I mean, we're going off on a tangent, but I can do that, right, Lori? It's my show.
Happy hour.
So, yeah. We always wonder about the real impact of our little HR Evolution event. And we know we're reaching into the real world of commerce right now. We're influencing how business is getting done with these light up ice cubes.
That's right. Light up ice cubes, baseball cards.
Right.
Me.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think there is a connection there because I think in a lot of some of the keynote speakers and a lot of what we discussed today, doing business is not only showing up for work every single day and doing what your job is. We talked about social media and how important it is. We talked about getting to know the people that work for you. And we talked about how important it is to make sure that the people who you're trying to reach enjoy what they're doing or at least attracted to it. And I think the flashy beverages is just, you know, sort of goes right down that road. If you're going to socialize in a room full of people that you want to work with, having a flashy beverage might make them happy for a couple of minutes. But I think, I mean, I don't see any reason why that doesn't make a good correlation.
Ryan, I'm with you 100%. No, all kidding aside, I think you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
There is, you know, I talked about this a little in my presentation when I wasn't, like, dropping, you know, unfortunate basketball references. The embracing sort of the whole view, right? The larger view of how people are coming to work. They want to bring their networks with them. They want to bring their tools with them. They want to bring their technologies with them. And sort of that rigid, you know, everybody line up in your desk world is long gone. But I mean, while physically we know that world is long gone, I think at times we sense that sort of mentally or emotionally we haven't quite let it go in some organizations. I don't think there's any, I think that's true in many places.
Well, I think it is true, but I also think there's an awful lot of people that are trying really hard to break down some of that mentality. They do want it to be, it has to be business driven, but business, you know, you don't, in most industries, you don't have a business without people. I mean, I have yet to find a company totally automated.
Completely robot it all out, all the way? I mean, I would do that if I could. I'd robot it out the whole way.
No, no.
You're a better person than me.
Well,
clearly.
I need a drink.
That line between sort of being social and being at work all the time. I mean, I think some people, especially around, you know, my generation, who are sort of making the jump in between go to work and sit down and do your job and bring your network with you, there's a little fair amount of guilt that goes along with enjoying what you're doing at work, right? Thinking, you know, if I'm using my network and even if I'm using it correctly, you know, I feel a little guilty that I'm having so much fun when I'm at work and I'm enjoying it. I'm bringing all these tools that even though my company supports, I feel a little guilty because I'm, you know, the line there has been blurred and it's supposed to be blurred. But in my mind, you know, it wasn't blurred 10 years ago.
Right, right.
You know, I was just thinking, I'm a baby boomer, young baby boomer. But, I mean, I relate to the baby boomer position in all of this. And it's, you know, I know Steve and all of you guys out there now are the ones who've been dragging me into it because, you know, listening to Steve, your presentation today really struck me because you talked about how my generation was the TV, and we didn't get to bring our TVs into work, and your generation was the video games, and you didn't bring your video games. And so, you know, my tendency is to be like, leave your freaking, you know, smartphone and stuff, Twitter and Facebook at home. I didn't get my TV. You don't get your Facebook. And so, you know, I've been trying to focus on, let's think of how we can use these things in a way that will better the business and yet still, you know, be mindful of the risks, but not overboard.
Right.
So you guys have been very, the whole evolution and instrumental on me of opening my eyes that it is changing, and I can't say we didn't get to bring in our TV.
And I think some of the things that are happening too is, and let me just make a quick, I do apologize for folks who are listening either live or on the replay. I know there's going to be a little background noise. We are at a live happy hour for real. There are fruity drinks, there are flashing drinks, so I do apologize for a little background noise. We'll try to lean forward into the phone and enunciate a little better, right, Lori?
That's right.
See you all tomorrow.
So we'll do our best with that. So my point, yes, Beth, but I did have a point of follow-up, and I'll pitch it to Lois. I mean, I think we're seeing an evolution a little bit, right? I think we're going from that bit of, I want a Facebook at work to we're moving past that to how does social or openness or transparency, what business problems will this help me solve? And I think the more sort of enlightened discussions in around that topic sort of take it in that direction. Lois, I don't know if you have a comment about that.
Well, when I look at, you know, I catch flack from people because I'm a CEO and supposed to be a, you know, serious person, and, you know, several do. But yet I'm, you know, I'm on Twitter and I'm using social media, but guess what? I have found phenomenal employees. I have drummed up incredible business, new clients, new partners. I have learned so much. It's not because I sell, although this is a shameless pitch for an hour of using Steve's time, but it's not just about, yeah, he's shaking his head going,
my reputation will never be better.
It's because it's just another avenue for being able to reach more people, and there's technology that is facilitating it. But the same, I'm going to twist it just a little bit. The same people often that are scared about social media and that being used at work and how people are doing it, they're also the same people that are saying, no, you must pay $5 a gallon for gas and drive for 40 minutes to work every day, regardless of the fact that I'm not going to look at you once as Mr. Manager to Mr. Employee, but your butt had better be in a queue. If you're afraid of telecommuting, you know, it's that same kind of fears. It's like measure by results, not by the number of minutes that somebody is actually spending in your sight with their butt in their seat. Give them great objectives. Measure what they do. And treat them with respect that you know that they will get done what they need to get done, and you'll get the results. And who cares? I mean, I will admit, my conference, I checked Facebook today because I'm trying to find three people I went to college with that live in Joplin.
Well, right, sure.
You know? And I did. And I got a dirty look from my husband. He's like, Facebook? He didn't say that. We were on the front row, and everybody
yeah,
you know, but he's like, huh? And then I pointed to the word Joplin on the top of the screen, and he got it. But you know what? I didn't miss a beat. I heard every word you said during your session.
I'll tell you what. Anyone, if you missed any of it, ask anyone, Lois, they will tell you. It's phenomenal. Right,
absolutely,
Lori?
Absolutely.
It was great.
Really moving. Were you the one crying in the background?
I was.
Someone was.
Can I make a comment on the focusing on the results? That
please do.
I think that's such a great point, and I think we talk a lot about that, about focusing on the results instead of the activities or instead of the butt in the chair. But when we switch to that, it means we also have to train our managers and our supervisors to manage in a new way so that they are capable of managing by results, for results. Because if you don't have clear objectives and clear results, you know, not much work is going to get done. Or people say, well, I got all my work done, so I don't really have to work. In 2 hours a day, I got my work done. I don't have to work. Well, maybe the manager's not giving you enough work to do. So our managers need to be trained for this new style of work to allow us to do all of these things that we should be doing.
Can I play? I just want to, I don't know if it's a point that I want to make of playing devil's advocate. I absolutely agree with everything you said. However, in the federal space, there are so many rules and regulations that dictate exactly how we're allowed to bill our time. You know, if I have a client, for instance, that sees me on Facebook, whether or not I'm actually doing work on Facebook, it might reflect negatively on me, might be an issue. And there are some situations in which, yes, you manage to resolve. However, there are certain things that can't take place, and I can't bill my time, for instance, to a government project if I'm doing something other than working directly for it.
Yes, and that's not a devil's advocate to me either, because for me, and I'm always a devil's advocate to everyone else around this table, I think we also have to be mindful of the type of position. And, you know, a teller in a bank doesn't need to be playing on Facebook.
Right. It's all in context.
Yeah.
It really is in context. You're absolutely right. There's some positions where it's not appropriate. There are some hours where it's not appropriate. And there's some activities. I mean, you can certainly misbehave. Yeah. But the important thing is that if you can look at proper context, then
I agree, and I think things are different now. And I made that analogy in my talk today about television and video games and sort of the web and social networks. But unless I'm sort of misremembering due to senility or age or something, or misspent youth, I don't remember like going to work or to school thinking, oh my God, I really just got to get home to watch television or go play a game, right?
Or after work.
Kind of, and I think it's different today. I do think that whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or your blog or whatever it is that you do, I do think it's different how people tend to interact and approach those platforms. That
should we be changing that?
I don't know.
Are we mismanaging because we're saying you can play during the day?
Yeah,
I think that's a policy thing as well. I mean, I know lots of policies and lots of companies that say, you know, you can certainly spend a nominal amount of time doing some of your private, you know, checking your email, because everybody knows that you got to check email. Tell me not to check email, I'm going to find a way to check my email.
Great point.
And the policy will say, go ahead and do it. Just make sure that you are spending the amount of time that you said you were doing the work that you said you were doing, the time that you were spending taking checking your Facebook, your email, you are not billing to me, right? And so if you need to work 10 hours to achieve an 8-hour day because you were doing 2 hours of whatever you needed to do, that's fine. But 10 hours, if two of those hours were spent
checking your email. Yeah, and there's a whole, you know, and I thought about this in a slightly different context. Let me just do a quick reset, though. This is HR Happy Hour. We are live in Fort Worth, Texas, where everything is bigger, apparently.
Even the strawberries.
I'll tell you what, I had a lobster shot about a half an hour ago, which is something new to me. So that was fantastic, by the way. Lobster,
curry.
It was curry and lobster. It was a shot glass. Phenomenal. So we're at the Acquire User Event Structure 2011 in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm Steve Bose. Sitting with me, Lois Melbourne, CEO of Acquire, Beth Carvin, CEO of Knobscot, the man only known as Ryan, and we're going to leave it at that for reasons I'd rather not get into. I'm going to say hi to Mark Ramos, who's here. Mark, say hi.
What's happening?
Mark,
hello, everyone.
Marketing, right? The marketing guru here at Acquire.
I am the low man on the pole. The team runs marketing. They're awesome.
Give it up to them.
They put together a fantastic show.
Yeah, so you were sporting some nice moves last night.
You know, I did a nice blend of Vanilla Ice and John Michael Montgomery. So, you missed that. Register for 2012.
I feel comfortably teasing you. I've known you now all 16 hours.
Sure.
So, we go back.
And we threw down some karaoke, some dancing.
There were folks singing that we did not plan, and they did not plan on singing. However, by the end of the evening, we couldn't tear the microphones away from them.
Right, right.
And the choir folks singing together was special.
Nice sense of
and a
order.
Pleasant happy hour sense of the word.
Yeah, so Mark, it's a great event, great job, your team's putting on a good show. It's still only really halfway through or
you're
so.
Halfway through.
Maybe, right?
Halfway
some
through.
Big things coming up the next couple of days.
We do. We have a focus group tomorrow.
Focus groups tomorrow. We have a big event tomorrow night. There's a rumor that our friend of the show, Brian Abramowitz, is going to drop into town tomorrow to do a presentation. If Brian doesn't show up, Lois, what's plan B? I go again?
Hey,
I just go right again?
Yeah.
Do it again, right? Why not?
Just plan on staying.
I'll just stay.
He's staying.
I'm just going to stay. I'll be here tomorrow, absolutely.
I'm
not working as hard tomorrow, though, I got to tell you. I'm going to kick back a little bit tomorrow. So this is HR Happy Hour. Our calling number again, 646-378-1086. Our Twitter hashtag is HR Happy Hour. Lois, I want to talk to you. I want to talk about analytics. Every single week, right, we do this HR Happy Hour, and we talk about Acquire and the leading provider of workforce analytics. But it's not just your little slogan, right? Analytics is sort of deeply sort of embedded into what the products that you guys build and the services you're providing to your customers. I just want to talk a little bit about analytics, if we could, for a minute. One is, what are you seeing from your customers that have been maybe running or publisher for a long time and now are looking to, and running HRIS from SAP or PeopleSoft forever, now looking to really evolve their understanding of their workforce and their workforce needs? What's happening in the market?
I think actually that last sentence that you said is really key. It's that understanding their workforce and the trends and what's going on with their workforce. So one of the really unique things about Insight, which is our analytics tool, there's several unique things, but one of them is its ability to measure talent management and the success of talent management initiatives. So, you know, there's been a lot of money. It's a, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry in the world for doing talent management and learning and succession planning and performance management, et cetera. But, you know, it's kind of like that, you know, who's watching the hen house? You know, there's all that activity going on, but how do we know if things are being successful? So, you know, we spend a lot of time with our customers helping them manage and measure those things that say, are we retaining people? Who are we retaining? Are we retaining the right people? And which leader is good at retention? Which leader sucks at it? You know, how do we fit in that marketplace?
Right.
And so they can benchmark, but, you know, benchmark the whole another
story. One day we'll have to do a should you benchmark session, because that would be a hot topic.
That would be good.
Happy hour.
To me, the benchmarking goes, it's like a tangent to the best practices discussion as well, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're going to have people come down on both sides of that.
That would be a good one. Let's do that one. But it's important to be able to measure what you're doing so that you can then dive in deeper and say, are we doing the right thing? And which things impacted our work in the business?
Right, because first step is sort of we do a lot of things, and then sort of we start counting how much of whatever it is we're doing. And then we start saying how quickly are we doing it or how slowly. But whether or not those things, right, that's sort of one of the next steps. Right, is understanding, well, what do those things mean to our business? On that note, I want to welcome Andrew Courtois to the show from Acquire. Andrew, how are you?
Thank you, very good.
Yay!
You did a presentation on analytics today, which was actually fascinating. I loved the presentation. It was short, though. Should have been longer. Lois, Andrew needed more time.
Next he did. Talk to Mark. He's the producer.
All right. Rainbow dropped the ball on that one.
What did I drop?
Andrew, could you, you talked about sort of the birth or the history of analytics, or when did analytics start? Could you just share just a little bit of that, what you talked about today at the event, for our listeners about the sort of the dawn or the birth of analytics?
Sure. Yeah, I went on a little literature tour of the history to find out where analytics started. And so I went right to the Stone Age. I'll start there.
Good place to start. Far back
Stone
Age. Yeah, right?
Stone Age.
And, you know, the Geico caveman came to mind. And he's, it's so easy to save money with Geico, even caveman. But he doesn't have analytics. So he's making tools and he's making weapons out of stone. But there's no analytics there. So I fast-forwarded a little too far, as it turned out. I went to the Greeks. And I learned about Eratosthenes. And he was calculating the circumference of the Earth.
Right,
on,
right.
You know, it's information from the library in Alexandria.
And just kind of stop from that. So guys in ancient Greece, right, someone figured out the circumference of the Earth from sort of looking at the stars and doing a few other things. And it's like, until there was Google Maps, I couldn't find the dry cleaner, like, consistently. It just blows me away. I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry. That's a digress.
He's in the library, and he's looking at, you know, the materials there, and he sees in a town a distance away, Cyrene, on a particular day, the sun shone directly down in the bottom of a well. So he knows, the sun is directly above that town.
Right.
So on that day, I'm going to go outside and measure the angles of the shadows so I can tell. And now he's got a triangle, and he knows the Earth is round, he's assuming. And so he's got to figure out the distance between the two towns. So he went out and talked to the camel drivers.
I would have hired him.
Yeah.
I hire smart people like
Andrew
and him.
Would have been a good hire.
Yeah, I talked to the camel drivers, and I say, well, you know, it takes us 4 or 5 weeks to get there. And so he figures it out. He's right within 1%. And nobody would do that well for another 1,500 years.
Wow.
And people tried, and they went out, and they were surveyors, and they were measuring. You know, and this guy did it from his library. So he had a little bit of data, and he had a lot of knowledge, right? This is a guy who they called Beta, because he was the second best person in every field at that time. He wasn't the best, but he was the second best. And he's obviously a genius, right? He had analytics. So I said, too far. I went too far forward. And I went backwards again, and I found Babylon and Mesopotamia, what's now Iraq. And I looked at what they did, and they had this transition from the hunters and gatherers,
right,
farming system. And these weren't folks who were just farming for their own sustenance. They were farming for the people. And so this is a big change. We have people who are now allowed to go do other things because we got farmers out there who are going to feed it.
Right, and that's a lot of responsibility. If you're going to say, okay, let's everybody stop roaming around, killing things so we could eat, I'll just stay here and I'll work out how we can grow enough that we'll all survive. And that's a lot of, you got to kind of know you've got it figured out to make that transition work.
But you see, there's workforce analytics, because you figure out just how many people do you need to farm, how many people do you need to hunt, what time of the year is it going to be good for each, you know. They had to be good at this.
They had to figure it out. And so they had data by watching first the stars. They understood the days of the week. Well, they named the days of the week.
Right.
After what they could see. And they saw stars were all fixed except for 7. And they called them wandering stars. And it was the the sun and the moon. Well, the moon's not a star, but everything in the sky was a star. And so they named the days of the week after. So the sun's day became Sunday, and moon's day became Monday, and Saturn's day, Saturday. And then the names of the other planets changed over time, but there's their week. And then they understood the lunar month. They understood that. That's fine. And then they needed to figure out when to plant key things to make this transition to farming. And so they watched the sun rose, and there was data there. And they understood that it rose perfectly due east on the first day of spring and the first day of fall. And other times during the year, it was either southeasterly or northeasterly. And it was south, it was moving towards that where the sun came up from the most southern part, and that was the first day of winter, the shortest day of the year. And as it went the other way, it moved all the way up to the northeast, so the first day of summer. I understood these seasons, and that was how they were able to make that transition. So that, I declare.
That was the beginning of analytics.
That is the beginning of analytics.
Woo!
So, there it is.
Mark this expert, now we know.
But that's a fascinating story. I mean, I'd never heard of it. And thought, I mean, I kind of always, didn't people sort of go on faith, right? So before that guy figured out the world was, round, or before someone worked out all the time for, you had to go on faith. Well, I have to have faith the world is round, and if I'm going to head off in that direction for weeks on end, or I have to have faith that if I plant here and now, we'll have enough to eat. Just sort of analytics took them, or their version of analytics takes them past just faith, right?
Yeah, that's right. And you remind me of Deming. It is my favorite quote from Deming.
Deming, we're going to Deming quote. It's the first major happy hour show. Let's go.
How did it go? How did the radio? In God
we trust.
I need another drink over here.
Yeah.
Deming said, "In God we trust, and all others bring data."
Right.
So he had that both. He had both. He had to take that leap of faith, but he also wanted to see.
Well, that's interesting. So when you guys are working with your clients and you're sort of trying to take them down that path of sort of just data to through analytics to understanding, do you find often or occasionally anyway, maybe Ryan, maybe you see this as well in your work, that once you start surfacing data, that their long-held assumptions are completely wrong? Does that ever come up? Does the client ever say, boy, we thought people we recruited from here were good. Turns out they're not good. Or we thought these managers were pretty strong. Turns out they're not so strong. Do you ever get any of that?
You might be able to answer this a little bit better than I. I'm actually not in the HR field. I'm more of a technical guy. But typically what we find is that the people who are in their organizations understand their culture so well that they're most of the time right. They just don't know why they're right.
Okay.
And so the data that actually comes to support why they're right, and sometimes they're right, but to certain degrees are off, supporting the notion of what they have right and what they have wrong is key for what they do day in and day out, especially to make sure that they can justify their budgets and justify their decision making. But a lot of times they are right. They just are right because they've been living in the same organization for 20 years.
HR does often know what's going on. I mean, we're in HR. We know what's happening within the company. And often and having the analytics and the data does allow you to go to senior management and say, it's not just anecdotal anymore. I've got the facts. It's not just one person saying this or that. But we see that sometimes we're wrong about things, too. And I work with, aside from mentoring Steve, my other love is exit interviews.
I know that. I know it.
And the exit interviews are a great way to move things from anecdotal and find out the real story. And I was just telling, I don't know where he went, Ross earlier about an example of a company, an insurance company who had a department with really high turnover, and they were absolutely sure that they knew what that turnover was from. They thought it was from a specific manager, a female manager, and she was kind of tough, and they thought they're all quitting because of her, and they were sure of it. But once they started looking at analytics and looking at their exit interview data, it turned out that it was not the manager. They were fine with the manager. They respected her. It turned out that there was a training class that they had stopped providing, and it was a training class that you really needed to grow within the organization or within that field, but the training class was no longer offered, so they were all quitting.
And once they knew that for sure, for real, based on the data, they were able to put the training class back in, turnover slowed down in that area, and using the data.
I love that sort of aspect of sort of understanding, or at least attempting to understand where sort of an operational or a business decision, a policy or program starting or stopping, or some change, some announcement, some crazy speech by the CEO. And what happened? What started to happen right after that? You know, like sort of that timeline of things that happen in the real world and how that sort of manifests itself in the data, which I think a lot of organizations, it's sometimes not so obvious, right?
Well, we get it, you're right. And one of the things that Acquire does is we try to work very pragmatically. I mean, that's really is kind of the heart of a lot of what we do, pragmatism. And one of the things that we have found is that so often people are looking at analytics over time, and then they try and remember why did this inflection point happen? Why is there a big spike in employee satisfaction? Why is there a real dip in when we were hiring contractors? And when you're working with spreadsheet after spreadsheet after spreadsheet, it's really hard to remember that. So one of the things that we did is allow people to almost like put a sticky note to their analytics to say, this is when we hired the new chief operating officer.
Right.
Well, this spike is going to be because we had a reorg. This is when the merger happened. And oh, by the way, let's also annotate when we started this new benefits program, because we were promised it would give us all this, this, and this. I had this wonderful conversation with one of our clients, and I won't say which one today because I don't have his permission, but he talked about how they had married up with Gallup.
Right.
So Gallup told them what their results would be if they worked through the Gallup process of doing employee satisfaction and measuring it and taking the data in and doing more with it. And by golly, they're right. And they've been able to see the results that were there. But let's say it's 6 years down the road and you're looking back at that historical data and you didn't put down what day did you start the Gallup process, and when did you implement these new things, and when did these other things happen? You lose that historical reference. I mean, look at what we do when we dig up some old book or scrolls of something. We don't know whether that was some guy's attempt to entertain his child or whether it was a factual account of something that happened. You need information in context. And so you've got to make sure that you record what the context is,
right,
and that you can see which leader was impacting what.
Right. And you talked in your presentation about the different types of analytics, right? And I guess you could envision an organization trying to make this move, Lois described, to move to those sort of simple ones, right, which you call descriptive statistics, and then you went into metrics to move into things like inferential statistics and sort of predictive analytics. Finally, prescribed. I was paying attention. Andrew's looking at me like I'm crazy. I wrote notes. I wrote them all down, man. I was listening. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that. As you look at analytics and you look at an organization's sort of journey of, I don't know, maturity perhaps the word, through the different types of analytics, and maybe as well a comment in your experience where organizations sort of slip up and where it gets really difficult.
Sure. Well, building on the Gallup experience, Gallup has an advantage that we don't have, and that is that they come in and do the survey research, and that's their data. They own that data.
Right.
Is their own data. They're the experts at that data, right? And so there's this critical moment when they see their data and they don't believe it. And we have to be completely transparent to say, this is how we calculate it. This is where we're getting the data. And isn't this what we all agreed on? And because at the instant when you were mentioning they first see their data, they don't want to believe it. And so there's that critical juncture when we have to build that consensus that, yep, this is the right data, we're calculating it right, and if there, God forbid, there is a mistake, and somebody doesn't have it calculated right, blows all credibility. So there's that one point right up front where you have to have it right.
Right.
Now, when we were talking about the different types of analytics, there being, you know, descriptive statistics, just the basic. When you got all this data, you can't consume it all. You have to do some summary stats to help you understand what's going on in the data. Very basic. The metrics are similar to that, only we want to know a little bit more about it. So we're talking about attrition. What has attrition done? I don't want to know that Joe and Sue left. I want to know what the rate is. What percentage of my workforce did I lose in this measurement period? That tells me something that I can compare to other people. And then we'll go a little bit further, and we'll talk about inferential statistics. We want to infer something that's going outside of our own data set. So we see what the variables are, how they react over time that's in our data, and now we're going to predict what's going to happen in the future. So that's a part of a predictive model. There are lots of predictive models, so there are lots of different tools that we can use. And one of them is just building models with business drivers built into it. We can just do, look at the data itself and say, we're going to do time series forecasting based specifically on what we see in the data. We're going to look, well, we've got some seasonality in there. Let's strip that out. What's left in the data? All right, well, there's some cycles in there. Okay, let's take that out, strip that out. What's left in the data? Well, there's an overall trend. Let's take that out. What's left? What does the data have to give me? Build that all into a model, and that's just based on the numbers. And then finally, the ultimate is the prescriptive analytics, you know, optimizing what your goal is. So we're talking about a predictive model. I use it as an example, the warehouse with the inventory. And I have a predictive model. I know what I need to build up the sales to meet my unit number. So I'm going to build stuff and sell it. Sales have told me what my number is there. And then I got to figure in scrap, and I got breakage, and I got Joe who's got, he's responsible for making sure this project gets done. And so he's going to take something out of the warehouse and put it in his desk. I gotta account for that guy too. So there's lots of things happening to my warehouse. I'm gonna build that up as much as possible because I'm responsible, for instance, for production of that product. Well, then the CFO comes in and he says, "What the heck? You got all this inventory in there? I it cost me money to have all this inventory."
And that's the fail-safe approach. I'll just stock everything.
I'll lock it.
Right? And you can do that with materials, and maybe you can even do it with people too, right? If you can afford it.
Yeah.
There's the corollary. That's right.
But then you also have to look at the flip side. So his story talks about how you have to make sure you have enough. But now we've had a beautiful example, sad, very sad example of the dangers of just-in-time inventory, which is Japan and the car manufacturers. There's going to be an awful lot of luxury cars sold without automatic seats. They're not going to have
that.
And trust me, I've got two friends that are high up in car dealerships, and they know when those cars are going to start hitting that don't have electric seats, because the vendor that builds electric seats for 80% of the cars sold in America has not produced since the earthquake in Japan.
Wow.
So analytics are very interesting. Just in time is very interesting. It all ties back into employment.
I was just going to go off, and I want to ask Andrew one more question. But we're so damn spoiled. I mean, we are. Electric seat.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
You know, I people should go check out the comedian Louis C.K. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a comedian. He's been on TV. Louis and the initial C.K. He's got a great YouTube video. I think I posted it on my blog once, but it's a very popular video, and it's something along the lines of, everything's amazing, yet we're all unhappy. You know, and he's talking about, like, he was on a plane, right? He's on an airplane, and he's sitting on the airplane, and the guy next to him fires up the laptop, and the Wi-Fi doesn't work. Like, they're 30,000 feet up in the air, and the Wi-Fi's not working. And the guy next to him is like, "Oh, this sucks." And Louis C.K. is like, "Are you kidding
really?
Me? You know, we're shooting through the sky at 600 miles an hour, you know, strapped inside a metal tube, and you're complaining, you know, that this Wi-Fi is not working. It's just amazing."
Because your employees can't bombard you with 52 more emails in the next hour.
I think we're so spoiled. I do. I do. Andrew, I want to ask, just real quick, tell the story about Harrah's. I just love that little story you told about how the casinos use Harrah's, but I bet they all do that, use analytics in sort of really revenue generation, quite frankly,
yeah,
in the story you tell.
That's right. So they have these, I don't know what they call them even, they're
loyalty cards.
So every time you go in and you start to gamble, they swipe that card. It doesn't matter if you're at the craps table or in blackjack, they know every dollar you're putting in to Hera. And they also have your experience, all of your history of your spending, your gambling with them. So they know what your pain point is. And that's what they call it, your pain point. That's the point where you throw in the cards.
So when you start losing about $70, that's when you quit.
That's for me, $70.
Right. Right.
Somebody else.
Right.
High
roller. That's what I'm thinking. So there it is. And so they actually send an employee out and say, this guy's getting pretty close to that point. Let's push him back from the brink there. And, hey, you're having a tough night at the table. Why don't we send you and your wife to a nice dinner on us?
Right.
Or maybe your room is going to be calm. And they push you back from that brink, and now you're ahead a little bit. You're way down, so you're feeling a little better. You're away from the brink.
Yeah, and I love that idea, right, that intelligent data sort of helping the organization sort of make the most out of that customer experience. Beth, I wonder if we could use something like this and take your exit interview data, right, figure out when people, where their pain points are, why they quit in
the
extreme.
We actually do that
figure out how to intervene in time.
We have the new hire surveys as well. And if you look, when a person gets hired, that's like their most exciting time. They just accepted the job. They're so excited. And then eventually do they get to the point where they give their notice and they quit. So it's like, what happened from when they're like, yay, I got the job, to I'm putting in my notice? And it's like identifying what happened, where did that go wrong?
Right. You got enough data and enough data points in there, like, well, who did they interact with? What projects did they work on? Where did they go? What clients did they serve? I mean, you could probably start to sort that out. Like maybe in Andrew's example, rather than losing money at the craps table, it's like, well, boy, everybody we send to Acme Company client, you know, 6 months later, 40% of them are gone, right? And so we know there's a problem there.
Come out a little earlier and move them somewhere else.
Yeah, or fire the client.
Right? Right. I think I love that story. And what I started thinking about was, is there a way to think about that in the workplace, workforce kind of experience and do it, but do it more than just gut feeling, right? Because in a situation like that, your managers would know that client sucks. And you would know people are pissed off about having to go there, but maybe they give you a lot of revenue and they're hard to walk away from. So you'd know it, but you wouldn't really know maybe when you could intervene early enough to try to mitigate some of that damage.
So here's the other interesting thing about that story of Herod's, and it's an open question. What would an employee loyalty card look like?
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking, right? I'm going to write that down, Lois. Employee loyalty card.
Employee loyalty card. There's a question for the ages.
Come in.
What would employees want to share? Okay, now I'm on a quest.
I love it. So I wrote that down. We're going to work on that. Hey, we're gonna wind it down and wrap it up. This has been a super fun show. Hopefully folks will catch it on the archive replay, and we'll make sure that you guys have a copy of it as well at Acquire, and you can cut it up. And Andrew, you want to make this on your demo reel and cut up the good parts, and you can do that. So we're at Structure 2011 from Fort Worth, Texas. This is the HR Happy Hour, episode 101. We're going to wind it down and sign off. Thanks to Lois Melbourne, Beth Carvin, Andrew Courtois, Ryan, whose last name I'm not going to give, who's here with us as well. Mark Ramos has said hi and is still with us as well. And Lori Stanford as well. Lori's going to read us out in great Mark Stelzner fashion. And we're going to say goodbye from the HR Happy Hour. Before Lori goes, Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern, HR Happy Hour Europe debuts. We're very excited about that. And then next normal in our normal time slot, 8 p.m. Eastern time Thursday night, You Can't Fire Everyone with Hank Gilman from Fortune magazine. So that's going to be a good show.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So, Lori, take it away.
All right. This episode was sponsored by Acquire, providers of leading workforce planning and analytics software, and, of course, barbecue. Okay, not really barbecue, but we are in Fort Worth, Texas at 2011 Acquire User Conference, and there will more than likely be a mass consumption of barbecue while we are here. Follow us up at hashtag Structure 2011 to find out what Steve Bowes looks for in good barbecue.
And good night, and thanks everyone from the HR Happy Hour.
Cheers.
Yeah.